A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Dynamite Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by another Dollywood, Michael Sidgwick from What Culture, to review everything that happened on last night's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube, where we do daily wrestling podcasts where we're not going to review AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Collision, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on Wrestle Culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Sidgwick to review AEW Dynamite. Just a little bit of precaution here. We're only a few days before flying to a WrestleMania.
I still might be next to people.
But, Sidge, what did you make of this show?
Well, the succinct way of putting it is that I thought it was really, really, really good. Not quite great. Mm-hmm. There was a repetitive quality to the show in that it was very in-ring heavy.
Yes.
Which, usually I like a trifecta, matches, promos, angles. I felt like there could have been more promos on this show. But with the stage of the promotional cycle they're in,
yeah,
they're not, you don't want to peak that build dynasty too early. Mm-hmm. So you understand why no one's doing their puffed chest, their best sound bites and the promos yet, nor why there isn't a big heat angle, because you want to do that. At the time, WWE just did it with The Rock when he like, right, I'm paying for Rock's blood. Oh, good, he's going to, you know, wrestle in about a week or whatever.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
When you do that sort of thing. So with the stage of the promotional cycle that AEW was at, yes, do an in-ring heavy show this week, of course. If they do this for the next 3 weeks, I'll probably be like, come on, I want some more stuff. So I understand why, of this week of all weeks, they decided to do the storytelling like this. Very, very match. But at the same time, it would have worked a lot more had that crowd been a lot more up for it.
Yeah.
And they were for the main event, which we'll get to. That is a big, big thing in Swerve's favour.
Absolutely.
But elsewhere, just felt, come on, you're going to get a big card of in-ring action. Get a bit more up for this, which detracted from the aim of the show.
Yeah, to be incredibly patronising on a show with sensational wrestling on it yet again. They achieved everything they set out to do on this episode. And like,
yeah,
that's good. But like, and there was some, you know, amazing stuff on this show, as I say. But there was nothing that like took me by surprise almost. Well, one thing did, but
that's why they call it an angle, you know.
Sort of the manifestation of all of our fears that we will get to.
That's why they call it an angle, but there's no angles. But maybe not the week for it. Because you can't go angle overkill.
No.
And we saw that with, like, you know, years and years of Russo.
Yeah, fair.
There's a time and a place.
Surprising. Well, not surprising. I think I just had assumed that we'd called it correctly and they were going to finish, but it made sense in the
Your analysis works, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's always the thing where we book something and if it doesn't happen, I go, disappointing.
Yeah.
They opened with the match, Shibata versus Will Ospreay. I'll run through it and then I'll get your thoughts on it because it was, well, I've got a question to ask you about one of the people in this match and it's not the one that many people would assume. They sort of go back and forth, you know, very cagey exchanges early on. Ospreay sort of groundwork initially. There's sort of a stalemate. And then Ospreay just explodes out of the corner. Shotgun dropkick, forearms, a stalling corner dropkick. Obviously, the opponent there. Shibata bails to the floor. Ospreay hits a slingshot dive, but he takes too long to get back in there. Gets a running boot by Shibata on the outside. And they trade suplexes. They trade strikes. And then Shibata hits Ospreay with a suplex on the floor. Get back in. Ospreay tries to win a chop battle with Shibata and gets it to hit with a big Saito suplex to take us to break. When we come back, Ospreay's getting sent into the barricade, but he comes back with, basically a phenomenal forearm back inside. takes over on Shibata and then thinks Kawada kicks will be a good idea. Not against Shibata, that just woke him up. He starts no-selling, he drops Ospreay with just one shot at that point. Underhook throw from Shibata, tries the abdominal stretch, switches that to the octopus hold. They trade Germans. Ospreay goes for that handspring Pele kick, but Shibata just counters that beautifully into an STF. Ospreay gets the ropes. He's having to escape submissions left, right, and center here. Blocks a PK, forearms. Shibata just eats shots and then hits one. It's far more effective than three he's been hit with.
It was really, really, really cleverly done this.
Yeah, and there was a nice double down following that after an enziguri from Will Ospreay. Goes for the hidden blade on Shibata. He ducks it. Sleeper suplex, gets a choke on Ospreay, but he just gets out of it. Shibata gets hung up on the ropes, shotgun, springboard dropkick and an Oz cutter, but Shibata kicks out at one. They trade lariats, Ospreay hook kick, backdrop suplex and a huge forearm for two. Ospreay hits the tiger driver, but Shibata just sits up and goes, come on then, see what you got. Hidden blade from Ospreay, 1, 2, 3, a lovely show of respect from each of them. After the match, after Ospreay gets the win.
This is about the only time I'll ever, ever, ever try and manifest this. Wish I had like a button like WWE presses. I mean, come on. It was weird because there weren't like, the crowd wasn't deathly silent during this. It was weird, like the spaces in between when they weren't doing much stuff. I think there was like dueling chants, a chance of Ospreay, maybe even a this is awesome at some point. But like the actual authentic noise of that shriek almost when Shibata just rolled through the Tiger Driver and then went, right, come on, finish me off. Like I was, oh no, but then I didn't hear that crowd reaction echoed back to me. I desperately wish this was soundtracked by a better atmosphere. And it's one of those where like I never subscribe to the idea of a bad crowd. Like when WWE was at its dirt worst 2019, you'd say, oh, another bad crowd tonight. Mm-hmm. It's like, is it a bad crowd or is it just a dog rough product? And in the case of WWE in 2019, it was, of course, a dog rough product. No one's going to react to that loudly. It was just doing nothing to elicit this really visceral emotional response. If you're like AEW leaning, and especially if you're making the noise that they did during the main event, like, poor Shibata, man. Like, it was just a little bit. I think this match could have been something verging on a classic. I'm very much a Shibata guy, so maybe I'm biased.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm blinkered and I'm not looking deep enough into the plain facts of the matter is that Shibata is kind of a jobber to the stars in AEW. He has lost a lot of big matches and maybe they don't receive him in the same way as I and the other big resurgence New Japan fans did. But it was still like disappointing. And I thought, come on, you've got to give it up for that. So that was a shame.
Where he was as well.
I know. But I'm going to get into the praise of the actual construction of the match imminently. I don't want to be like too much of a downer because I did enjoy it personally immensely. It's just one more thing, though. Someone in the business I was chatting to once upon a time. I'm not trying to flex my sources or anything like that, but one person in the business, couple. One of them said, tonight you should watch Hogan versus Rock on mute. It's like, no, I don't want to ever do that. And he just went, exactly. Like, you would never, ever do that. And this just underscored. There are so many moments in this match that could have been elevated to something seminal had the crowd really, really been there with Shibata. And it's kind of that, all wrestling matches need sound. God knows we've had reminders of that over the past however many years. But this one especially just needed those ooh moments. Not like the chants, not the back and forth, almost performative, this is awesome. But you need those, you need to wince. You need to just shriek at the resolve of the human spirit. Didn't really get enough of that, so it did drag the match down slightly. But I personally had such a fabulous time with it. It's reached a point now. Well, you've got a question to ask me, don't you?
Well, yes. Just a quick word on your crowd thing. I don't want to be the, you know, I hate it when people are just always bang on about tickets and da-da-da-da-da-da. WrestleTix reporting about 3,500 in the Centre Vidéotron.
How long ago was that tweet? I thought they were on 4100.
Yeah, this is what confused me. That's why I was looking at this. So they were on 4100 tickets distributed, and then apparently sections 105 and 106 got closed off and removed from the estimate. So I don't know what's gone on there. Oh. People were saying this in the comments. So let's say between 3,500 and 4,000 in attendance, which is slightly disappointing. The visual that everyone's seen on social media is so depressing in terms of, like, you want to see, like,
say, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, it's an 18,000. What?
Chewing gum.
What the f*** are they doing?
Right. Yeah.
When was this arena booked? I understand that it's, like, kind of months and months in advance.
Yes.
A lot of the times. Not, like, announced, but actually booked or whatever. They must have been quite cold when they decided, let's do an 18,000-seater arena in a province, Providence? Mm-hmm. An area?
Mm-hmm.
That I don't think they get Dynamite here.
Really?
I know that I think TSN carries it, but it differs from region to region. Someone on Twitter replied saying, in advance of the show, that they were half concerned about the atmosphere and the number of fans because it's not available legally in Quebec City. 18th, like a proper massive indoor arena. And it's just the gulf again in the atmosphere between the 7,000 last week, which there was like full of the gills.
We use the phrase cauldron a lot, don't we? Yeah. That's what you want.
Yeah, you want that intimate throb. I don't know what they're thinking. They've got the new COO.
Sorry.
What?
You said intimate throb. I thought sex. So.
Okay. But you want it? Don't you want it? Don't you want it?
Yeah, they've got the new COO.
And part of
Kosher Irby, right?
Yes.
Yes.
But part of their job description is to oversee the operation, one of which is live events.
Yeah.
If I'm the new CEO...
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Or the COO of AEW, and I'm liaising with that live events department, my first order of business is to say, what makes you think you can fill it up?
Mm.
Do you not understand? What is the... What is, like... Because they've got to be expensive to hire as well.
Yeah.
Like, what makes you think you can fill it up? What do the projections look like? Like, why are you hiring such absolutely enormous buildings?
Yeah, it's taken a step back to take a step forward, isn't it? Like, they've done it with Double or Nothing, haven't they? They've gone back to the MGM Grand this year, which people are like, oh, you know, well, you know, perception. But then I'd rather have people think, oh, they've gone to smaller arenas. Yeah, but when you see the show from there, it's going to look far better and sound far better, as you say.
I don't think I've ever read the really boring, that makes sense, business rationale that, sort of illuminates you on certain things where you're like, oh, yeah, it's a cold, hard reality and I'm fantasy dreaming here or whatever. Like, I remember when I was like many people, why can't you just turn John Cena heel back in WWE? Why? Surely it would make more sense. You could build more stars. You could give somebody else a chance to draw on top. It would resolve these weird atmospheres, split crowds. And then you really study or learn or read about, bone up on, this is how much money WWE makes and will make with a Cena as a babyface on top compared to what they're sacrificing in terms of public image, merch, live events, everything without them. It's like, that makes an awful kind of sense. I want to hear that kind of rationale to defend what they're doing with the live events business, because I'm not even getting that.
Yeah.
Answers on a postcard, I guess.
Yeah, on one occasion we might sell out the building, and then what if more people wanted to come and we couldn't sell any more tickets?
But wouldn't it be a better strategy to make it look like last week, if remotely possible, every single week?
I agree.
You get that really elusive premium feeling of, oh, I can't miss out. Mm. And then if you can maintain being that red hot, then you start to think, all right, we'll do a big 20,000 NBA arena, whatever. And I don't know how it works, but it isn't working for them. Anyway, like, it looks bleak. Let's talk about how good the match was.
Yeah, is Shibata all the way back, basically?
Well, this match was expertly constructed to give you that impression. And that's what I was absolutely loving about it. I was able to suspend my disbelief. We were talking about the Shibata-Danielson match. and how the seatbelt burn we described, or you described it as, on his neck, and all of those what looked like pissy strike exchanges to the face were actually really carefully measured. And we discussed, does Shibata have a, a head bump quota?
Yes.
Where he can have five, maximum of five. They greatly exceeded that threshold last night.
Yeah, he's clearly had six matches where he took no bumps and banked it up.
Yeah. Aye. And those like ROH 10-minuters were just nice, saving it for this.
Yeah.
But the glory of this match, which I thought was an excellent, excellent story and action and smoke and mirrors match at the same time, irrespective of the volume and the atmosphere, was that they told the story of, it's Katsuyori Shibata versus Will Ospreay 2, mm-hmm. in effect. 7 years have elapsed since the first one. In that intervening period, Will Ospreay looked like he was 12 in that footage. Did you see it? When they showed the highlights of the first match, he looked pale, gawky, skinny. And what's weird is that when he was in that period of his career, he looked like an even gawkier dork before that, because that was when he was transitioning to the heavyweight ranks or getting tested in it. Certainly didn't look quite like Britt Rez Ospreay. But he looks like a complete animal compared to what he did back then. And the story was, Will Ospreay was a pale, outmatched, gawky Brit Rez geek. And now in 7 years, he's won tournaments, the most prestigious tournaments in the world and the most prestigious titles in the world. He's evolved to have one of the best chops in wrestling, to be one of the strongest men and fastest men. And like, he's got this incredible frame on him these days. And he's had to master the craft, bulk himself up, 7 years later, just to stand a chance of beating Katsuyori Shibata. Now, for this story to work, you have to sort of extend a bit of latitude and pretend, all right, well, Shibata is the same old Shibata. Time has stood still for him. It hasn't. Mm. He almost died.
Mm.
He endured a subdural hematoma. He is obviously not quite the same wrestler. But the idea is they played with that version of Shibata, and they had to tell and had to portray him like that for all of this to make sense. And god damn it, at various moments in this match, I believed it. It's like Ospreay's been on the 7 year journey to be able to one day beat the great Shibata, even if it's not the great Shibata or it hasn't been the great Shibata. I bought it because they just worked it expertly, as you said. The idea of Ospreay was just like forearm, Shibata was just, there you go, you're down.
Yeah.
Like all these little tricks they did to cast Shibata as a man for whom time has stood still, when that isn't the case, sprinkled across this match, I thought was so unbelievably well done. Is Shibata back? He's obviously taken more to the head, but they've obviously trusted Danielson and Ospreay to have these sorts of matches with him. It's still not all the way.
No.
Obviously, he's never going to do a shoot headbutt or even like a really safe headbutt in his life, ever. It's still not all the way back. I just think they've entrusted Danielson and Ospreay to be able to best cast the illusion of the undiluted Shibata experience. And I thought Ospreay did an unbelievable job here. Like, on par with Danielson, which is sort of a meta wrinkle to their match that they're going to have a dynasty. If you watch it, there was a lot more stuff to the head, right? But if you were to go and analyze, don't do it. You got swept up in the moment. Watch it again if you like later, but don't frame by frame it. But I did rewind it a little bit, and you notice, like, there was certain forearms Ospreay's putting very little behind them, and he's shouting, and he's trying to use his, he's trying to use his voice and his body language and all the rest of it to cast the illusion that I'm smacking this guy in the jaw and in the cheek. He's not. Ospreay worked really light in certain moments, but in others, when the time came for Shibata to hit him in the face, he's like a light switch. Mm. It's like the airplane toilet.
Yeah.
That velocity with which he throws himself down. So I just thought they did it. Ospreay did an unbelievable job here. And Shibata is... What was weird about those first Shibata Converse matches, because he was in ROH and AEW, was that It was like a greatest hit set. Mm-hmm. You could tell his blade had been dulled, but there wasn't really much in the way of like body language or that aura that Shibata can transmit. Maybe it was a confidence thing, but that's returning to his game, if not the full head trauma, which maybe it shouldn't return to his game. But no, this is really, really cleverly worked. I just wish those awesome moments, like the one, the kick out at one, the roll through, just had that backdrop that they deserved. I want to say one more thing about this match, and that is Tony Schiavone. 5 years in, when if you look at the show AEW has been backstage, which he's a huge key figure of, he has must have seen it all at this point in terms of, oh, God, this promotion, it feels better morale-wise, but it's been obviously in the toilet at various points. He has watched and commentated upon 5 years' worth of Dynamite and a lot of Collision, and he's still got that I can't believe how good wrestling's got vibe to him. There's a bit in this match where Will Ospreay, how the hell he does this, I do not know, does a flat back bump, a kip up, and a like shock and drop kick at the same time. Well, I think he gets chopped, flat back, straight back up, kip up, and then and Schiavone's like, he's purring. He's like, my God, this guy's just as good as everyone says he was. He's just like, it's just, you need that warmth and that. So Schiavone was great. Just wish the atmosphere was better.
Yeah, I agree. And as if to get you even more excited for Dynasty, they had a video package after this. Highlighting the career of Bryan Danielson. People were performatively arseholes about this on social media, of course, today, saying, where were the clips from WWE? Well, two things. Bryan Danielson was never...
Were they?
Yeah.
I don't care about these people. I don't.
Two things. Bryan Danielson never wrestled in WWE. Daniel Bryan did. But also, what do you think was going to happen? Do you think do you want the WrestleMania 30 clip? Yeah, no worries. In you go. Come on. Anyway, Ring of Honor, New Japan.
Preposterous.
Ending his career, obviously. Come back, debut in AEW. And him saying, obviously, this final year of his career is going to be the greatest, and that will continue at Dynasty against Ospreay.
This wasn't the first video package. There were several. I think Takeshita got profiled.
Swerve.
Did I need any of this? I don't think so. This felt like a response to the people who aren't worth responding to.
Yeah, might be fair, that.
It felt like, I mean, maybe, right, they are trying to really tell you these are the people that you are to care about now.
Mm-hmm.
And in Takeshita, give it 6 months and he might have, I don't know, an international title run. It just felt forced, maybe, throughout the show. I'd rather
a bit panic with the ratings. I don't know.
I don't know. I understand the principle behind, and I've campaigned for this. I prayed for this and it happened. I want to know who are the ones I really need to focus on. I think your audience needs to know who are this core crop of main event acts you are building around. Like, who is it?
Mm-hmm.
It seems to change every single week. They're doing it now. I just wish they did it in a more show and don't tell way on last night. Just for like match video package. Like a weird format.
Yeah.
It was hard to get locked into the show as an episodic experience.
Then we have Renee Paquette backstage with Matthew and Nicholas Jackson.
Retrospective press of the button for...
Oh my God.
Ospreay Shibata, but another one for this segment.
Oh my God.
They said it's an ambush. Talking about Private Party beating them on one of the first episodes of Dynamite. We saw that as well, I should say. Matthew said they returned to AEW to do certain things. Retire Sting. Tick. Restructure the Elite. Tick.
Can I just put over that use of the word restructure? It's like just the way they've tied it into the EVP stuff is, I thought that was really good.
Bringing Kazuchika Okada and most importantly, getting their AEW tag team titles back. The only way to right a wrong by beating Private Party tonight. Matthew says, Renee, you're doing a great job, but smile a bit more. What?
You cannot say that. No,
and they walk off asking where Marvez is as well.
I loved all of this. I love the idea that Renee asks one pertinent question and my brother's a bit of a hothead. Nicholas Jackson just flies off the handle. If he wants Marvez...
Flies off the handle after grinning maniacally while she's asking.
He's got that Tony Khan Richter grin.
Yeah,
and I love how they keep doing that. If he's demanding the return of Alex Marvez, who we know he outwardly hates and despises, what does that say about his perception of Renee?
Yeah.
Like a really good bit of heel work there. You cannot say that.
No. Women,
but it's the best possible use of, oh, he's a misogynist dickhead. without being really ugly about it. I think they've found the perfect heel line to be able to get that kind of heat. Like, I watched that and I was like, oh, you prick.
Mm.
I think that's the perfect line because it's not that ugly, but it is something. Like, women do not exist to brighten the moods of men.
No.
But that's what that character thinks. Not the person, obviously. No. He just knows how to play and portray a heel on television really well. But like, oh, come on. You're putting me in a mood now. You exist to brighten my day.
Here's a smile.
Here's a smile. Cannot say that.
The match immediately followed. Private Party and Young Bucks. I really enjoyed this.
I did as well.
Obviously, the nice
callbacks. I have some qualms.
Matthew Jackson starting the match off going, hey, fist bump, come on.
He's such an asshole, isn't he?
I'm going to fist bump you. Got some near falls. Matthew comes back with a back elbow. Blind tag from Mark Quinn. And they do stereo backflips into super kicks, leading to a double tope, which was lovely. Matthew recovered, tried to send Private Party over the guardrail, but there was a silly string there by Zay, which looked great. Nicholas and Mark Quinn are fighting, standing on the railing. Nicholas hits a falcon arrow to a great reaction.
Oh, my God.
And Okada's watching. Oh, we saw Okada show up in his sports car as well, just prior to this too. He's shown watching backstage with his title, nodding in approval. Quinn's in real trouble, obviously, off the back of that falcon arrow. Zay sends him back into the ring at 9, gets hit with a suplex into a backbreaker. And the Bucks are in control as we go to a break. When we come back, Zay gets the hot tag. He runs wild. There's an enziguri to Matthew whilst on the apron. Zay hit a moonsault on Nicholas on the outside. Springboard crossbody back inside on Matthew, gets a near fall. Private Party getting the whole support of the crowd at this point. Zay goes for a twist of fate but misses. The Bucks hit an avalanche sliced bread powerbomb combo for 2. Quinn breaks it up, pulls his partner to the corner, gets the tag. Nicholas hit a German suplex on the apron. The Bucks want the Tony Khan driver, but Zay holds on to Nicholas on the apron, and Quinn, obviously in a callback to their first match, rolls up Matthew for a great 2. More bang for your buck misses. Gin and Juice connects, and Zay and Quinn actually hit their own version of more bang for your buck, but Nicholas breaks up the count, so goes and gets the ring bell. Rick Knox is like, you can't use that. That allows Matthew to hit a low blow, but Quinn hits him with a tag title belt shot, I think it was. Nicholas puts his brother's foot on the ropes. Quinn goes for the 630, but it's crash and burn. They go for the EVP trigger. Nicholas slips and doesn't really hit it, but regardless, 1-2-3 on Mark Quinn. And again, Okada's just liking what he's seeing backstage.
I thought this was very, very, very good. It was always like, I'm trying to like pierce a film. Like, it was always like just like that on the verge of greatness, and then something prevented it from reaching that or just breaking through. Like, I thought the storytelling here was really, really strong. The callback, we said it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I think everyone realistically knew it was going to happen. But the when it happened and the 2.99999 just got me. So it was a really, really clever bit. It was the one element of the match that everyone knew was coming, but they extracted the maximum amount of drama from it. The ultimate irony of, and I am trying to get away from using bad opinions to form my opinions, because you're never going to get a good opinion from that. It's just you're arguing with morons. Dave Meltzer on Twitter. But it is ironic that people just say, even after all these years, that the Bucks just get their shit in.
Mm.
Because if anything, the complete opposite is true. Because after that great shine from Private Party, a really cool and brutal way to get into that extended heat sequence with the Falcon Arrow, and then Quinn selling, like, this is all a traditional structure. Once Isaiah Cassidy got in, like, if you notice where the Bucks know where to be, how they pace the comeback, how they build it, because they do very much, and I've been told this as well, when they are laying out a match, they are very much, you know, you do this, you be there, you have to be there, I'll be there, don't worry about, I'll be there. Like, they are very forthright about how these matches get crafted, and the reason is because they're f***ing great at it. So when Isaiah Cassidy is doing his hot tag, they just know where to be so that his stuff just looks amazing. They are not the get your shit in wrestlers. Mm. They are the get your shit in facilitators. Yeah. That's what they are. So it was all going really, really well. But even before the slip at the finish, I was a bit... The belt shot didn't really land. Mm. Like the near fall and then the leg on the rope. I just felt that felt a little bit rushed. Mm. They didn't register. Hang on, are they going to do it again? I wanted that feeling of, I'm going to beat them again, are they? But I thought the belt shot sequence was a little bit rushed. And when they'd said in the pre-match promo, oh, don't worry, Okada's not going to come out. We're going to get this done by ourselves. Maybe that was a misdirect for the, it's the low blow. But I wanted to see Okada.
Yes.
I wanted to see my hot, new, awesome star on TV in any capacity I could get him. So I thought that maybe didn't work as a misdirect because I think a lot of people in the building might have thought, where's Kazu? So it did fall apart before the slip. Two more things on this. The slip, right? And it's not just the slip. This attire that the Young Bucks wear.
Preposterous.
It's preposterous. It is so douchey. Is it the sort of thing that's better on paper? Literally better as a visual. They looked so much more comfortable wrestling when they'd gone from boots to sneakers in 2021. 2021 Young Bucks is my favorite tag run ever. Mm. And they obviously are big, massive sneaker heads. They wear sneakers, trainers, all the live long day. So it's obvious that they probably did their best wrestling when wearing what they wear all the time.
Yeah.
I just feel like, I don't know if those boots are slippy, if the material's all a bit, just feels like
I know
cumbersome, inhibitive. Like, when you're wearing a suit, legitimately, I love wearing a suit, everyone looks good in a suit, but there is a bit of, when you want to sit down and all the rest of it, you just feel a little bit aware that you're in something like that. I know maybe it'll take some getting used to. I just get the sense, and I got it in the, who did they have the match with that was only, it's a Top Flight. A few weeks ago, before Revolution, where it was like, this is really good, but I don't know if I'd like you in that outfit. Mm. But it was when they were wearing the blood still.
Yeah.
I want them in tights and sneakers. Maybe they can make that corporate in some way. One bit I did like, I like the silly string on the barricade. I thought that was really clever. Yeah. And I liked the idea behind Nick Jackson doing a German on the apron. It was very much, I like it when a wrestler, obviously they have to stick to their moveset, because it's a case of when, not what you do. All wrestlers do the same moves all the time. Mm. But I do like a deviation every now and then, especially in a match like this, because it tells a story of we're going to have to go deep into our sort of reservoir of knowledge here because they are our bogey team and I'm really quite frightened of losing. So we need to like dust off every little trick we've got.
It's really enjoyable, yeah. And obviously they progress through to the semi-finals.
The Western semis. The West semis. Semi-final Western bracket.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is when we got the video package on Konosuke Takeshita. And we see Mercedes Mané showing up at the arena. She's going to be on commentary for the four-way. Darby Allin's on crutches at the skate park with Tony Hawk. He was meant to climb Mount Everest, of course.
I know it was for charity.
Yeah, I didn't know that aspect of it. It was going to be for Hawk's charity, the skate park project, but he broke his foot. Hawk talked about his charity and skateboarded and had to help out with the cause, which was just nice.
Just a nice, nice thing to do. But there was a bit where Darby said, I can't climb Mount Everest, but I can't do this, or something to that effect. And I'm like, you're going a half pipe with a broken ankle. Yeah. Like, what are you doing? But no, it was just Tony Hawk. I was going to say Tony Khan there. I was imagining him on a skateboard. But it was Tony Hawk using his leg to base or whatever.
Something like that, yeah.
It was nice.
I meant the skater boy. He said, great.
Greater boy.
He was a greater boy.
How do you think Tony Khan would describe the musical oeuvre of Avril Lavigne?
Great.
Yeah, correct.
Oh, made myself sad. We're backstage with Hook and Jericho. It's a collective groan in the studio. Renee congratulates Hook on his win over Jericho. Jericho says, being in the ring with him, Hook exceeded expectations. His first pinfall ever, and it was on me. Jericho's proud of him for that. He's never had a school. He's never managed anyone, but he's also never been in the ring with someone like Hook. He wants to tell Hook that after 33 years, if Hook wants any advice, he'll be happy to give it to him. Here's for you, Hook. He's here for you, sorry, Hook. I sort of said, here's for you, Hook. Hook appreciates the praise. Of course, he's going to take advice from Jericho. He's Chris Jericho, but he's Chris Jericho. He knows who Chris Jericho is. And Jericho says, I know who you are too, but I also know who you can be. So he's going to mentor Hook.
And then turn on him at some
point.
There's
a Lion Hook t-shirt that I sent you this morning.
Yeah, it looks legitimately like Nestle should sue. Just looks like the Lion Bar logo, doesn't it?
It does.
This is piss. This is absolute piss. Drivel.
The one thing we didn't want to happen.
We knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Crap. I want to get into why it was crap. Chris Jericho. To be fair, right, I'm not trying to play favorites. Obviously, at this moment in time, I like the Young Bucks act more than Chris Jericho's. The Young Bucks did this as well, where they were like, well, Renee, we came to do three things. This, this, and this. It's like, I saw it. What is wrestling's obsession with exposition-heavy dialogue? And reminding me every week of what you've done the last week.
I think it's the market leader for the last however many
years. I know it is, but please, could we get away from it?
Yeah.
Like, please, it's
neat. Especially if you're not that show.
If you're in the advertising industry, right, and you're a high-ranking exec, and you think, right, I need to watch this show, or buying time in it or whatever, and you look at, and you read this dialogue, and you listen to this dialogue, rather, and it's no wonder they have this perception of wrestling fans being idiots. Mm. You never get this kind of dialogue in any other scripted medium. Wrestling does itself no favors whatsoever.
You know, they do like previously on whatever TV show it is. If wrestling did that, it'd be the first 20 minutes of the show.
I'm not being funny, right? Previously in Our Feud. That is the dialogue style, Wilborn.
That's a new shorthand now. Previously with Chris Jericho and Hook.
Yeah, but previously with every wrestler ever. That's brilliant, Wilborn. Come here.
Hey, come on, baby, on a roll.
That's previously in Our Feud. Previously on our character arc. That's how every wrestling promo ever on telly begins.
Yeah.
It must end. And Jericho, do you know that previously I described you as a future world champion? This week, you are a future... I get it, man. I'm not thick. I mean, I'm not that clever, but I'm not that thick.
Going on a world tour soon for 3 weeks. So, you know. I think that's Christ. October. I think it's October.
That's soon. Make sure it's after Wembley. So, exposition.
Probably start, if anything. Play Wembley and then go from there. Yeah.
So, here's the thing. Basically, every time Hook opens his mouth, I know he's going to have to learn how to talk eventually.
Mm.
If you're going to be a main event player in the wrestling industry, like the days of being able to, like, I know Sabu didn't talk, but I mean, come on. Mm. national cable, big time TV. You have to do it. You have to work. You have to be able to work a 30-minute match at some point, and you have to do a big long promo exchange at some point. That is just what a US TV headline star has to do. So I know that that's what they want for Hook. I know that Hook has to learn this skill. Every time he opens his mouth, because I veer all over the place with Hook. Sometimes I think White Hart prospect has a presence you cannot teach, has this cool factor. He's the kind of young person where I think I am old. Mm. That's Hook for me. Every time he opens his mouth, he just feels like a bit of a short-lived meme from 2021 who was never as good as his first five squashes.
Mm.
I honestly don't know where I stand with Hook anymore. This is certainly not going to help. Chris Jericho, and I described him in this in Ups and Downs, whatculture.com/WWE, wherever you get your articles from, which is that website. Yeah. Don't get them anywhere else. Right. Chris Jericho is like, you know, that trope, The Simpsons have done it, but then The Simpsons did it, of like the shop that has just mysteriously appeared in town. And it's like a spooky elder shop owner, shopkeep, who will sell you his weird wares for a price. That's Chris Jericho. He wants the essence of the young to maintain his corporeal form. That's his character, and he thinks it's good.
That gives me a real flashback to last night. I had the real, oh God, I'm old moment. I know what Riz is. I'd never use it outside of, you know, taking the piss or something. I saw some people using a phrase yesterday on social media, and I thought, I've genuinely not got no idea what that is. Do you know what soaking is? Not in like the new parlance, not just getting something wet. Do you know what soaking is?
No.
I'll tell you afterwards. Don't Google it, everyone. Right. Oh, sorry, Sid. I bloody messed my notes up here because I appear to have a women's match in the first hour. Just. Only just. It was a TBS title match, of course, or for a match for the TBS title, AEW Dynasty. Julia Hart, Chris Statlander, Sky Blue, and Willow Nightingale. Mercedes Moné on commentary, of course.
You say, of course. I'd never remember anything she said. Sorry.
She's there. She was there not to scare.
I love Mercedes Moné.
Mm.
Not as a guest commentator.
Mm. Yeah, I don't. There was a bit of me where I was like, I don't want to be that guy, but I'm like, what are we doing here? Come on. She's just been brought in. And then she's there. Oh, I'm there to improve the women's division. I'm not just here to. And then I was like, come on.
I'm still locked in let it play out mode. I don't quite know what the first match is going to be, when it's going to be, what the dynamics are going to be. They are telling you, or trying to show you, a few different routes.
I also think I may have just said...
This was not a good night for her.
I also think I may have just said Julia Hart was in this match, which would be stupid because she is the champion.
Anna Jay
is the name I should have said.
Jinx! Can't talk now. Follow us all at Adam Wilborn.
Hey!
Actually, what's your middle name?
I'm gone.
Have you not?
Right. Banter, probably. speaking of which, shout out to Stokely Hathaway, who came down with Nightingale, ran up and came back down with Starlight.
Yeah.
That was a good bit of patter. It was a bit annoying the way this was immediately. I like glanced away, glanced back, and I was like, where's two other people gone? Like, it was immediately like, boom, you've been knocked out.
Yeah, all right, you've been knocked out cold. What are the chances? And every time there's a singles match involving more than two people, his concussions are really specific to this one.
A devastating clothesline.
Yeah.
So Blue gets sent out to the floor onto Statlander, so it's Anna Jay and Nightingale. Splash in the corner, charging low crossbody for a Nightingale 2. Blue comes in to break things up. Quick DDT. Statlander makes the save with a sliding lariat. Jay follows up with a low neck breaker. Statlander's shown off her brilliant power. But Blue puts a stop to things on the outside to get launched by a Nightingale pounce. And there's a nice stare down between Nightingale and Moné as we go to commercial. When we come back, Willow gets sent outside. Statlander runs wild on Jay and Blue. Planted with a spinning fisherman's driver for two. Statlander wanted a 450, but Jay hits her with a superplex instead. Nightingale runs in, Blue almost gets hit with the Doctor Bomb, but rolls through to get a two count. Hits a code blue, but Statlander breaks up the count this time. Hits a Powerbomb backbreaker. Anna Jay comes in. Gory Bomb on Statlander onto Blue, but it can only get a two count. Statlander manages to avoid the Queen Slayer, sends Jay into a Nightingale shotgun dropkick. There's a nice and a nice face-off between Chris Statlander and Willow Nightingale. Blue's like, I'm not having any of that. Blue hangs Nightingale in the ropes, wants a suplex, but instead Willow hits a Death Valley driver on the apron.
Oh my God.
Jay rolled through Wednesday Night Fever and sent Statlander packing, but Nightingale hits a Doctor Bomb and gets the 1-2-3, immediately laid out by Julia Hart with the TBS belt, though. And she stares down Monet, but bounces as soon as Statlander and Stokely Hathaway check on Nightingale. She gets the title shot at Dynasty.
Yes, so what's Monet doing, if anything?
This is my question. I was like, oh, good, but, huh?
So do you... I guess you're fit. Just why would you, especially when, the thing is, if you've got Ospreay and Okada in the chamber ready to go, right, why, and you think, oh, I could do money, I mean, she's not fit, you just wait.
Yes.
It's not as if you're like, oh, it's not as if you're Tony Khan and you've ever experienced this. Oh, I don't have any new signings. I do not have any new signings lined up. I'm jonesing for signings.
It's been a whole...
90s!
Since I've done a signing.
Oh, God, I need a signing, guys. No, you signed, like, an all-time great.
Yeah.
And the consensus best wrestler in the world. And the consensus best wrestler in the world might already be an all-time great. And the all-time great is still in his prime. You know what I mean? It's like, you don't need another one. It's just not cleared. So I'm thinking she must be cleared. So maybe it's going to be... where are my manners? Where are my manners?
Oh, yeah.
Money.
Versus Chris Statlander.
Okay.
That will enable her to defeat new TBS champion Willow Nightingale. And that's why she's primarily interacting with them two.
Why don't you just win the world title? That's what
I'm still in Let It Play Out.
Yes, that's fair.
Even though there's been a very, like, it's not insightful to say this, but that does make it less true. In fact, it makes it very, there is a WWE element to this. Here's my video package. Have a look at it. I'm coming out to do a show opening promo. I'll be out later on as well. The guest commentary, like WWE did not invent guest commentary, but it's bad. Bad guest commentary is more something that they like to do. So it's not great.
No,
I don't think it's terrible.
Willow Nightingale.
I
was happy for her to win this match.
Honestly,
but.
Mercedes Moné, I'm not saying that she's just walked in aloof. You know, just this entitled top star she'll wrestle these women, but she doesn't really care about them. I'm not saying she's that, but she was seemed so, again, happy to be here. Oh, what's this, a headset? You know what I mean? Didn't seem completely dialed in. To the extent that when she was like, oh, here comes the code blue, I was like, I didn't think you'd know that. You know what I mean? It's the way she carries herself. I don't know. Let it play out. It'll turn out great, this. It will. She's too talented for this not to be great.
It's funny. I did have this conversation with Anna Louise this morning. I said to her, what are they doing, Ms. Mercedes Moné? And she said, she might be injured. And I went, well, why is she here then?
She shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
I don't think she is.
I feel like an idiot now. She has obviously come in, as we've said, to change the women's division, which is why, of course, I mean, just check my news here. This is the one women's match on the show. And since before we get to the name of the game, we have to get to the aim of the game.
The aim of the game is to identify to the hour, minute, and second. As I say this, I did not prepare the tune.
Oh.
So I'm going to have to just be a dick again. We want to identify to the hour, minute, and second. The first time you hear the first note of the first entrance theme for the first woman to come out for the only women's match on Dynamite to the hour, minute and second, because they play around, they take the piss. We still know what the game is.
Mm-hmm. And yes, we did know that they only did one women's match on Raw.
Yes.
Not gone.
They usually fall in that 120 to 125 range, or, you know, there's only ever one.
Mm.
So if we can just nail it, to the hour, minute, and second. It will put in bold, underscore, and italicize the thought process that we've kind of established now with AEW, where in that creative inner sanctum, it's all very much, oh God. Well, you have to put the birds on. Everyone will bloody kick off if you don't have the birds on. It's not a passion project, is it? Not a labor of love. It's not something they care deeply about. It feels like an empty exercise in optics that is also a self-own. And if you're still thinking, Sidgwick, I'm a bit confused about this thought process that you believe AEW to hold. Could you make it easier for me to comprehend? Well, yes, I can. I can jingleize it.
Yes, this is a word.
It is now. I can jingleize it. I've made a jingle to sort of jauntily explain the thought process that AEW has when they feel like they have to promote women's wrestling. Hopefully, in the wake of Money's arrival, things will change.
Yes.
That jingle is. Don't worry, guys. When the women come out to play, the main event ain't too far away. Don't worry. And that's the aim of the game.
Ah.
And the name of the game is, well, this is Ladies Night, and I'm thinking, what a night.
Just for fun, of course, this week, we know Michael Hampler.
Oh, we always have fun.
Michael Hampler probably being represented by a WWE microphone on the podcast today.
My son, at 15 years old, is going to hate me. We know when they're at the age when like they get proper embarrassed by your parents. Mm. And I'm on YouTube.
Singing and dancing.
Well, this is Ladies Night, and I'm thinking, what a night. Just stuff like that.
Shout out, as always, to the Panda Blair himself, Adam Blair, at Adam Wilton 4, and Jose Palomares, at the Ho11, who always take care of the
data
for this sort of thing. As I said, just for fun. So the standings remain unchanged. But why don't you give us our guesses in D, E, S, and D, sending? I'll never check.
Yeah, and I'll never find out. hang on.
I can't actually remember what your guess was, yes. Oh, no, actually, I think I do. I think I remember now.
What's going on?
Your guess from yesterday for this. Because I think you said a Mercedes was going to open the show again. Is that right?
Sorry.
I misremembered that. You got messages. What messages?
I was just dealing with some life admin.
Go on.
Do I want to wait to finish watching my first ever Harry Potter film? Or can the kids watch it tonight? Because they need a lazy night. I liked it as a nice fan. I didn't like it that much.
What are you up to? You done the Quidditch bit yet?
Yeah, I've done Quidditch.
Yeah, it's goated.
The guesses are... me? No hours, 3 minutes and 22 seconds. Adam Wilborn, I don't know you from Adam. 1 hour, 18 minutes and 55 seconds.
Both way off. But the moment I saw the little thing in the corner and it was like, coming up tonight, we got Ospreay Shabata opening and then the Young Bucks. And I was like, well, that's a win for Wilborn. It was 59 minutes and 3 seconds. So we're like 20 minutes off regardless. But no change to the standings. Thanks for keeping us up to date on that one. Adam Blair, and we'll see you at the What Culture Live Show. It's always sunny at What Culture. Still time to get your tickets, although they are rapidly selling out. WhatCulture.com/tickets for our show on day two of WrestleMania, of course.
I might start thinking of how to do the songs.
Okay.
I might do like
to guess, and we have to guess what the tune is.
Oh, we could
another
do
game.
Games in the game. Or I might just do it in like folk.
Oh. We could have a big wheel, and you could do the different genre each.
Oh my God. Who's going to build a wheel?
Phil will build a wheel. Class that.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No.
We are eating good at Christmas.
No, we're not. eat self-loathing at Christmas.
Sit down, James. Here's your real present. Let's watch this.
he makes us do because I was on Twitter and someone clipped it. He was like, "Oh, that's it."
It's, I think it was one of my favorite moments from last year. That was it. Carl Fletcher is meant to be opposing.
Yeah.
Renee Paquette's backstage with Dustin Rhodes, who's 3-1 in 2024. What?
Did that happen?
That's exactly what I thought.
It's dark still on, and I've just not been told.
It said, what's next for you? And I was like, so what's happening? What are we doing right now? I love Dustin Rhodes, but I was like, okay.
I watched Collision.
Yeah.
Where is he?
I assume Rampage.
Oh, I forgot about Rampage. In fact, oh, I did forget. Yeah, it's Rampage. It's obviously Rampage.
Nowadays, everybody wants to talk like they got something to say. Right, okay. Should we play? Yeah, yeah, you get there.
It's time to play the game! Time to play the game!
Can you name any of the people that Dustin Rhodes has beaten? Hang on, let's have a look. I tell a lie. Wow. He's had two matches on Rampage. Wait a second. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Okay, I get it. He's had two matches on Rampage. He's had one match on Dynamite this year and a match on Collision.
Was he in an eight-man?
He was in a six-man.
On Dynamite?
Oh, not on Dynamite.
What was on Dynamite? Eight-man?
Title match on Dynamite, no less.
What, this year?
17th of January, according to Cage Match. He was in an eight-man just... Oh, tell... Huh? What? Yes, he was in an eight-man, sorry.
Yes, he was in the eight-man with Copeland.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Brody Lee Memorial
eight-man.
I've got
3-1 written down here then, anyway.
So he's in the Brody Lee Memorial eight-man, which is really fun in Daly's place. He was in a title match on Dynamite.
According to my notes here.
So, Cassidy?
No.
What? Oh. Wasn't Joe?
Christian Cage.
Oh, that match was class as yeah. Well. Yes, thank you. Oh, sorry, Dustin. That match is unbelievable. He lost it.
Yeah. That was his one. He's also beaten... That's why, okay. I've gone, wait a second. Why did they say he's 3-1 and he's 4-1 here? Spoilers, sorry, everyone. I've just seen the Rampage result. Come on. I love the Butcher, but no one's backing him to beat Dustin. Yeah, he also fought Willie Mack on Collision on the 13th of January, and he tagged with Von Erichs against Hit Romero, Cruz and Shimbashi Rampage. So anyway, what's he going to do when he faces... let me just show my notes here. Butcher! I'm not sure we saw this one coming.
Oh, no. Nope.
Didn't. Spoke Butcher! Accused of bad breath and said it's my mustache. It has its own musk.
I do like that. I love the butcher, man.
I love the Butcher, man. And he also gave us a flashback to their bunkhouse match from a few years back, which...
Oh, my God.
He's loved in Canada. He's not going to be a stepping stone. And see what happens with him on Rampage. Sorry, everyone. Timeless Tony Storm.
Put that one of your bullet points.
Timeless Tony Storm.
Timeless Timey.
Is there with Ben Mankiewicz of Turner Classic Movies. Congratulate Storm.
You didn't say tuts there.
Congratulates Tony Storm on being AEW World Champion and redefining the art of pro wrestling. And she congratulates him on whatever he does and tries to get him to do a catchphrase. He does chin up. He will not say the tits out part, and he has no idea what she's talking about when she says watch for the shoe.
Isn't this just repurposed footage?
I have no idea what
or
this
did
was.
Did they just film this at the same time as they did it the last time?
I would assume so, and just thought, well, we've got a week to kill.
We probably could do with having our women's champion on the show.
Yeah. She lose last week?
Yeah.
Seems fine about it, so.
And imagine Joe.
Yeah.
Like losing and being all right.
Video package was Swerve, and then it was time for the other tag tournament.
What's so funny?
I already know it's Swerve. He's great. Another tag tournament match. It was Best Friends versus the Undisputed Kingdom. I like the bell ringing. Cassidy just walking over and chinning Taven on the eighth.
Yeah.
It's funny. Taven sends Cassidy into the steps, but gets hit with a dive from Trent Barretta. Bennett gets involved, dive of his own. Cassidy takes them all out with a jump off the top with his hands in his pockets. Loads of spots back and forth on the apron, and that's what takes us to picture in picture here. When we come back, Barretta gets the knees up on a Taven Lionsault and gets the hot tag to Cassidy. Top rope crossbody. But Bennett blocked the twisting DDT, so instead Cassidy hit a Stun Dog Millionaire and then a nice charging knee from Matt Taven. Cassidy kicks out a two from the Proton Pack from Taven and Bennett. Taven tries the Spike Pile Driver but gets crotched by Trent. It all breaks down. Beretta hits a Tornado DDT. Cassidy hits a spinning DDT. Trent hit a charging knee strike. They want the hug, but Roderick Strong appears and drops Chuck Taylor in amongst all this. Cassidy takes out Strong with a dive. Taven tries the Spike Pile Driver again, but this time gets crotched by Taylor. Beretta jackknifes Bennett. 1, 2, 3. It's going to be Best Friends and Young Bucks, as exemplified by the Bucks coming out from their
great
elevator entrance, walking down the ramp for 10 seconds, turning back, and then I thought, please show them lowering back down, and that's exactly what they did. That was good.
I love, like, people in those positions just want to flex their power over the most trivial things imaginable, and I just love how they nailed that aspect of the ongoing management parody. So that was really good. Probably better than the match. The match was fine. It was just kind of there. Some of the moves with the Zed were cool.
No offense, I like Taven and Bennett, but I did not think this is where they start. This is where the tag champions of ROH,
yeah, I know,
turn it around. It's a mess.
It's a mess. It's a mess. ROH continues to be a mess. Undisputed Kingdom continues to be a mess. Where's Wardlow? Wasn't it his job to protect them? Or is the idea that he was absent and Roderick Strong? He was a diversion. Where were you? I don't care. I do not give a single toss. End this now. We've just disappeared.
They're going to do a match at Supercard, I reckon. As I said, that's the reason why they lose here.
Yeah, they lose.
The Best Friends losing in the semi-finals. If we can get there quickly enough. I know it's like a week and a bit away. And maybe they do, because you get Orange Cassidy if you're going to Supercard of Honor. So
yeah, I guess. It just existed mostly. One thing, though, like, it felt like they saw the lineup and thought, we have at best a shot of having the fourth best out of
five.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
At best. Why don't we do a pile driver on the apron?
Yeah.
And what the hell's the point? And I'm not one of these losers, right, who says, oh, just kill that move. What year is it? No move gets killed ever. You have to be that doesn't work. I keep saying this example. 1988, Clash of the Champions 2, Sting and Dustin Rhodes versus Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson. There are no mats around the ring. Sting takes a DDT on the exposed concrete. I felt bad. I buried John Cena for this at SummerSlam 2010, but that's all right. Sting does it. Takes a DDT on the exposed concrete. Arn Anderson rolls him back in the ring. Instantly, no dramatic effect. Not like, oh my God, a DDT on the concrete. Oh. And then Tully, that just doesn't happen. Tully just pins him. Not a fire up, like.
It's
like 1.5. It's not like the 2.99.
Yeah.
It's not the fired up at one.
Yeah.
It's just this 1.5 of a. I'm watching this right. It's the amount of boring 80s arseholes.
They have different concrete back there.
Yeah, the amount of boring 80s arseholes were like, DDT was a finish back in my day, boy. No, it wasn't. No. Just watch this. So I'm not saying the pile driver was a move killer or anything quite so stupid, but it felt totally pointless for a dangerous bump and accomplished nothing. And there was a bit as well where Cassidy does the Stun Dog Millionaire, right? And Bennett does, like, one of those pretty cool stunner oversells. Just does a sort of caught on the backdraft and goes to the turnbuckle. Then Taven hits him with the knee. Bennett just pops straight back up. It's like, all right, Proton Pack. It's like, this is rushed and pretty shoddy in terms of its construction.
Just before the main event, Renee Paquette's there with cool Kyle O'Reilly. He's got a new T-shirt. Looks a lot better in this one.
Yes.
Nice white T-shirt. She gets congratulated on his win over Brian Keith on Collision. Said it felt good to pull that Band-Aid off after such a long time. Says the AW roster's stacked. Paquette asks if he's rejoining Undisputed Kingdom. He said, no, I did it on my own against Keith. I'll do it on my own again. And on Collision, I'll prove once again where I belong.
Yeah.
And we'll play a game to preview that tomorrow. Main event time.
Hey.
Swerve Strickland versus Konosuke Takeshita to see who is the number one contender for Samoa Joe.
Match was class.
We went in, didn't we? Full disclosure, if you didn't miss the preview yesterday, going on the same show as Ospreay and Shibata, and especially, you know, when I saw Ospreay and Shibata were opening, I was like, better pull it out in the main event, lads. But my God, did that.
They did.
Fair play.
This is class.
I like the bit from the beginning where they're like, handshake. And then they're like, I'm not letting go. And Swerve immediately gets in a headlock. They go back and forth. Strickland flips out of a whip to the ropes, short arm scissors, and Takeshita escapes and hits a Takeshita line as we see Samoa Joe watching on backstage, slugging it out. Strickland hits a backbreaker, but Takeshita comes back with a brainbuster, and
I have to interject. This brainbuster, right? The brainbuster is one of my favorite moves because, like, someone said this is how we kind of protect. I wouldn't want to know. It just looks devastating every single time. Takeshita's brainbuster, right, is so tits and it looks so disturbing. He might as well drag someone up the apron, climb on top of the friggin' tunnel, dangle them by their feet, right, sellotape their arms to their side, dangle them by the feet and just let go. I think that would look equally as disgusting as his brainbuster. So his head's going to turn into salsa if you keep doing that.
You need to calm yourself down because we're about to go commercial with a Takeshita forearm.
Oh my God.
Describe this on Twitter. He's got a forearm strike, like an unprotected attitude era chair shot. It's the sound it makes is obviously great, but awful. But great, but like, Jesus Christ. Calm down.
Calm down.
Heard someone throwing that thing around. He's a beast.
Yeah.
Hey. He is. That reminds me of the Don Callis thing about Tikka. Remember? Kinosuke Takeshi's the kind of guy who walks into a bar, his dick's already been there 2 minutes. Honestly, Kinosuke Takeshita is so he's a god.
Yeah, brilliant.
Swerve was amazing in this match as well.
Yeah, Swerve had to go over him, let's not forget. Yeah. Strickland's in trouble, we come back, but he gets a Hurricane Rana from the ring to the floor. He gets a one count from a top rope crossbody after that. His neck's in trouble. He's been targeted, as I said, by Takeshita. And Takeshita hits another huge forearm that Strickland's just like, okay.
Oh my God.
Takeshita blocked a rolling flatliner attempt into a fireman's carry facebuster, charging knee and somersault dive onto the floor.
He's got that Omega Osprey style of dive slash catch where it's like, you don't even have to put your arms out. I'll find you.
Mm.
Bang! Flatten you. They take like flat backs on the ramps to do these catches. I love it.
There was no, like, you and I both said, well, obviously Swerve wins this. He's going on to Dynasty. He's facing Samoa Joe. And there was no pinfall that I thought, oh, they've changed plans. But the bit where he's setting up for that corner brainbuster he hit on Ospreay at Revolution, I was like, I mean, if he hits this, that's it.
Yeah.
Swerve got out of it, though. Hanging DDT. Sky Twister Press gets two count for Swerve. Swerve goes for big pressure. Poison Rana into a blue thunderbomb.
Oh, my God.
That's one way of doing it. But Takeshita takes too long to capitalize. Strickland hits a right hand, tries the rolling flatliner and gets hit with a pump knee in midair. But Strickland comes back with a rolling flatliner, drops Takeshita right on his head. Swerve stomp on the apron.
There's no need. So I love when Pac takes those. There's no need to bump like that.
No.
I love that you've done that for me, but you don't need to do that.
Swerve stomp on the apron, goes back inside, tries another stomp, but Takeshita counters with a powerbomb. Some great counters. Takeshita avoids big pressure into a wheelbarrow German and that power drive knee. Strickland just gets the shoulder up, though. Takeshita wants an avalanche blue thunderbomb. Strickland fights out of that. House call, Swerve stomp, but Takeshita kicks out. They trade. There's a pop-up headbutt and a jumping knee in there. Strickland eventually, though, hits the standing Swerve stomp and big pressure. 1, 2, 3. Punches his ticket to Dynasty. He is the number one contender. And then Samoa Joe's pissed off watching backstage with Renee. And Renee's like, how do you feel after that? Always the happy-go-lucky self. Joe's like, it is baffling. This man is celebrating the biggest fate he's ever going to catch in his life. When he walks the ring next week and signs on the dotted line, I'm going to make him realize just what he's asking for. He's not ready. He's not that man. And as we cut from that, we see Swerve gesticulating that he is the next champion, celebrating in the ring. What a juxtaposition. This man should have signed his own death warrant. Yay! See you next week, guys.
A really good visual for that match at Dynasty, which I have reservations about, but we will cross that bridge. This match was unfriggin' believable. Like Swerve, I thought his selling was tremendous. Obviously, he was going to play babyface. He's leaning in that direction. But he can be fluid, and he will probably have to be at Wembley if that match actually happens. But he wrestled with so much creativity here as well. How do you describe, right, that thing he does when he looks like he's about to take a... It's like, why are you doing that? Where he's like about to jump over the ropes, and you think, is he landing head first on the outside by himself? That handstand, stick to the ropes, and then he does like the Hurricane Rana.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell do you call that?
I don't know.
But you know what I mean, though?
Yeah, yeah.
That was unbelievable. Sometimes is depending if Hangman Page is setting up for it, he's a genius, so it's fine. But sometimes the Swerve Stomp,
I was gonna say that, yeah,
people can like it's the Mortal Kombat finishing effect. We've talked about this, where they do that too much. To do it from a powerbomb reversal, that was just absolute chef's kiss. Chef's kiss. It was so many, like, Jesus Christ, you're gonna hurt yourself doing this, lads. Like a total head trauma festival of a shootout. Loved it. It looked so brutal. So like one of the better hybrid style shootout matches you'll see. And the drama, it helps enormously, right? That Kinosuke Takeshita is an absolute animal. It's like watching a magnificent beast. You know when like you see one in the wild, or let's face it, in the zoo.
Yeah.
Like, you are a magnificent beast that I would never want to be caught, like, in your enclosure. Mm. Like, it's this raw power of nature. That's Takeshita.
Yeah.
He's a magnificent beast. And he, in this match, just looked like he wanted to turn Swerve's brain into, like, just actual salsa. That, he's just, I love watching Takeshita so much. I need to see another match with Kenny Omega.
Yeah.
I need to see another one. I need to see another one with Ospreay. He's amazing. Swerve was so creative in this match as well. Something I wanted to say. Yes, this is what I wanted to say. Every promoter ever will say, here's my pushed star, my number one contender. Here's a number one contender's match. You beat this person, you get to the champion. It's incredibly formulaic pro wrestling booking. This felt so much like, well, he's earned it.
Mm.
You are in there with Kinosuke Takeshita, a magnificent beast who is intent on giving you CTE. That's his heart's desire, is to give you CTE. If you can survive that, you deserve the shot at the championship. Yeah, it's probably the best number one contenders match I've ever seen. There was a moment where I was like, this is so dramatic. In my head, I'm thinking this could go either way. The last 5 minutes, there's an absolute rarefied air tier of the best all-time Dynamite matches. Probably, if I go forward 3 months and think about it, this wouldn't be there. Those last 5 minutes were so close to being, Jesus Christ, this is something truly special. Amazing match. Absolutely amazing. And I think as well...
in a pressure situation as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This was a great night for Swerve. This was... he had a better night than Will Ospreay, realistically. I didn't think that was going to happen.
No.
I mean, does it ever with Will in this form? So that was a great, great, great thing for Swerve. And it was made especially just around... go circular on this podcast. Especially impressive that they got that noise out of that building. Yeah, they were losing their minds for this one, whereas throughout most of the night they were like, they were enjoying themselves, but they weren't like rabid. They were going ape for this.
Yeah.
Ape.
In fact, you stopped yourself and they went, nah, I'm going to go for it. Well, let us know your thoughts on that match and the whole of Dynamite in the comment section or on X at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. You can follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. Follow our brilliant producer at It's Adam Nicholas. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Me and Sidg will be back tomorrow on Great Friday in the Khan household, or Good Friday here in the UK, to preview AEW Collision. But for now, this has been the Dynamite Review. My thanks to Michael Sidgwick. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.